presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So in a weird way, Vanderbilt finds itself in a position against Georgia on Saturday that Georgia was probably in when it traveled to Nashville to play Vanderbilt in 2017. And part of this, the reason why I'm starting the show with this today, is because, admittedly, I just kind of think it's funny. You may or may not. You'll have to judge for yourself on that. But I am going to try to explain why I also think this might end up being relevant for something that's going to happen this Saturday as well. So are you with me thus far? Let's see if we can do this. Kirby Smart talked yesterday about the fact that one of the things that, for now, Georgia does not know about Vanderbilt is who its starting quarterback is going to be. And between the two guys that are currently battling it out, one of them is Riley Neal, a transfer from Ball State. The honest truth is, I don't know the other guy's name, and I apologize for that. I guess if he plays well enough on Saturday, I'll know it forever, but for now I don't even know who it is. But nonetheless, there are two guys battling it out for the Vanderbilt quarterback job, and Kirby Smart said yesterday they're preparing for both guys. They don't quite know how this is going to work out yesterday, or how it's going to work out this Saturday. Here's what Kirby said on Monday.
I've been there before on the quarterback situation, so I know how it goes and being able to manage it. But you know, we'll expect to be able to see both those guys, and if one of them plays the whole game, that probably means he's playing well. If we see both of them, they may be telling both of them they can play. But we've got to prepare for both, be ready to face both. And it's not going to be as much about those guys as the guys around them, because the guys around them are really good players, and they'll be as good as we face at those three positions this season.
So that's Kirby Smart. Now, I want you to notice something there. Now, we'll get to the whole thing about the Vanderbilt Big Three in a moment, the skill position players the Commodores have that are legitimately pretty good. We'll do more on that in a moment. But listen to Kirby when talking about what's going to go on with Vanderbilt at quarterback, kind of gives a calm, measured answer. Hey, we're prepared for both guys. I've been there before. I know what quarterback competitions are like. I've dealt with this, and we're going to kind of battle it out, prepare for both guys. And ultimately, this is an SEC opponent on the road, so whichever quarterback ends up playing, that's probably the right choice for Derek Mason. That's essentially what Kirby Smart says there, and that's kind of what you would expect. However, when the tables were turned back in 2017, and it was Georgia who, at least in Mason's mind, had an unsettled quarterback situation, Jake Fromm had emerged, but Jacob Eason was likely healthy enough to maybe come in and play if he needed to. Mason, at the time, when it was Georgia whose quarterback situation at least appeared to be unsettled, he didn't have nearly as calm and nearly as measured a response. Part of the reason I'm playing this is because I think it's funny, but it's also, I think, somewhat instructive for this Saturday as well. Here is Derek Mason from back in 2017 when the shoe was on the other foot and it was Georgia who was, at least in Mason's mind, trying to decide who its quarterback was going to be. Let's go back in time.
I believe, you know, Fromm, like, is the guy. I believe Easton's an extremely talented quarterback, but that's up to Kirby who he decides to go with. I mean, he's not fooling me. I mean, if that's what we think we're doing here, I mean, that young man, Fromm's won ball games. I mean, he just came off a 48-0 win. We can quit with the coaching dramatics. I mean, when it's all said and done, I mean, they're 5-0. They're a good football team with lots of talent. They're playing extremely well. And, you know, hats off to Kirby because he's done a great job.
I mean, listen, for the life of me, I will never understand why Mason got so worked up back then about the idea of Fromm and Easton. They were essentially similar quarterbacks anyway, and Fromm was playing better than Easton at the time, or at least he was playing well enough that you wouldn't consider benching Fromm unless Fromm himself were to get hurt. There were really very little in the way of, quote, coaching dramatics out there, and I don't think that Kirby Smart was trying to do anything to fool Derek Mason at the time, nor do I think Mason's likely trying to fool Kirby Smart here, because ultimately that kind of stuff just doesn't really fool coaches very much. But it is interesting nonetheless that Mason's talk was so big and so dramatic, and you know, he got so worked up and involved on this, so much so that later on that same week Kirby Smart was asked about what Mason had to say. Here was Kirby's response from back in 2017.
Again, Derek Mason's entitled to his opinion. Derek Mason's not, he's not at our practices. He doesn't watch our practice tape that I know of, so I'm not really concerned with those comments.
I mean, the last two programs in the world you would expect to have a war of words going on between the two coaches would be Georgia and Vanderbilt, but for at least a brief moment in 2017, that was kind of going down. That was kind of the case. Now, here's the reason why I think this is also relevant for this upcoming Saturday, regardless of who Vanderbilt ends up playing with its quarterback. Mason has shown you in the past that he's willing to kind of shoot from the hip just a little bit. He's willing to kind of go off the cuff just from a little bit. Boy, Georgia fans are already motivated to travel to Nashville. I think the Georgia team is motivated for the game simply because they're going to be so much red and black in the stands and because this team's chomping at the bit to go out there and battle another team after waging a war against itself in practice for the last few weeks. But wouldn't it be nice to add a little more spice to this thing? I mean, wouldn't it be nice to add a little more juice to this? And isn't Derek Mason, based on what he said in 2017, potentially the perfect coach to do that? The kind of guy whose, believe it or not, mouth has gotten ahead of him a couple times. Vanderbilt players much the same way. Remember that Vanderbilt guy that before the game against Alabama, was it two seasons ago? I guess it was 2017 as well, was talking about how, you know, they were going to show Alabama what was up, and Bama ended up coming there and beating them 56-3 or whatever the final score ended up being. Wouldn't it be nice if Mason's mouth kind of got running a little bit this week too? Because he's potentially got a guy he could tout if he wanted to. Keyshawn Vaughn, the running back. I mean, they really got, it's been kind of called a big three of skill position talent with Khalijah Lipscomb, the wide receiver, Jared Pinkney, the tight end. This is a pretty good level of skill position talent. Vaughn in particular is really a top flight running back. What if Mason in an interview this week or a press conference this week, what if he let it slip that he thinks the best running back on the field on Saturday plays for his team, or best running back in the SEC he thinks is his guy? I think that George is already pretty motivated for this game, but wouldn't it make it a little more fun on Saturday if Mason, who was outspoken in kind of a weird way in 2017, would also be outspoken again on Saturday? I think that can make this game more fun. Now, on a more serious note, when it comes to the whole big three and, you know, what's going to happen around the quarterback, whoever the starter for the Commodores ends up being, Kirby did talk about that a little bit yesterday, too. And this is legit. No matter, you know, what might happen for Georgia in terms of extra motivation for stopping Vaughn or, you know, some of these other guys, Vanderbilt actually has some pretty good players in these skill position roles, Vaughn in, especially at the running back position. So whether it's extra motivation or just a strong game plan, you got to show up and ready to stop these guys. And Kirby Smart admitted that when he spoke to reporters yesterday, too.
Well, you like a challenge. I mean, you certainly love and embrace a challenge. These guys are really talented. I mean, it just seems like they've each been superb players in our league. And you look at what they've been able to do offensively, it's pretty special to have three guys like that back. For three players that chose to not come out in the draft to come back, it gets your attention when you look up there and see Keyshawn Vaughn, same number of 10-plus runs that DeAndre Swift has. I mean, it's pretty special. It's eye-popping to catch your players. And we know how good Pinkney is from right down the road. I mean, he's a really talented player. So each one of those guys has done a lot to earn their respect of our players. Because when you do it in our league, it grabs the attention of the room.
There's a word that Kirby Smart used there twice that I think is really instructive for what's going to happen on Saturday. He used the word attention. It gets your attention when you see Keyshawn Vaughn's stats. These guys performing against SEC competition as well as they have, that gets your attention, he said. I believe I would read into that if I were you. I believe I'm going to personally read into that and say, wow, this Georgia defense is ready to go out there and stop some guys they've been told are pretty good. And the only thing that might make watching that more fun is for Derek Mason, who's been drawing offsides and shot off his mouth before, for him to be asked a question about Vaughn this week. To say one more thing to maybe get this Georgia defense excited, that might make Nashville on Saturday night even more fun to watch. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon, of course, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we are available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. And coming up today, boy, we're going to have a fun conversation just a couple of minutes with Jeff Sintel as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. There is a lot to get into. A big-time five-star prospect has listed George among his finalists. We'll talk about that. A former UGA grade has complimented in a big way a pretty impressive five-star target, at least, guy that's on the board here for the class of 2020. We'll do all of that and react to what might potentially be a new development in the Zachary Evans situation. So we'll do a lot of that with Jeff Sintel coming up here as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update in a couple of minutes here today on Dog Nation Daily. Before we do that, though, let me look back at yesterday at Georgia practice. Now, I was not there. I was in the friendly confines of these Dog Nation World Headquarters studios all day yesterday. But our buddy Connor Riley was there. Our buddy Mike Griffith was there, as he always is. And there was an interesting development that came out of Georgia practice that I thought was worth at least spending a minute or so here on Dog Nation Daily here today. Media gets to watch kind of a brief window of time out there. They get to see a little bit of what goes on out there. And Mike noticed something about the Georgia secondary. If you're watching on video, I'll show these words to you. And if you're obviously listening radio podcast, I'll read it to you. Mike writes that junior college transfer cornerback DJ Daniel was taking first-team reps on Monday, working opposite Eric Stokes and ahead of sophomore Tyson Campbell. Once again, that's Mike Griffith. You can read his full practice report at dognation.com. But an interesting takeaway there, that Daniel, the junior college transfer, getting a chance to get some reps at what looked to be ahead of Tyson Campbell. This is interesting because Campbell did start some a year ago before being replaced by Eric Stokes, and was kind of thought, or maybe still is kind of thought, to be the odds-on leader to be that starter opposite Eric Stokes for week one. At least that's the assumption we've been operating on here on Dog Nation Daily. But maybe the presence of Daniel in that spot there yesterday, maybe that changes the calculus for this a little bit. Now, on the one hand, I am absolutely not diminishing my opinion of Tyson Campbell whatsoever. Around here, we kind of talk about the idea of buying stock or selling stock. I own a lot of stock in Tyson Campbell, and I am not selling that at all. I think that Campbell is still set up for a big season in a way that I may not necessarily think that about every player in this Georgia roster. In other words, I think that Campbell, because of his skill set, because of the fact that he played last year, that's a guy who intrigues me here for 2019. I also stood by him last year when, you know, some folks were kind of coming at him after a couple of games, which he gave up big pass receptions, and I understand where the criticism comes from, but it hasn't changed my opinion on Campbell at all, and I remain steadfast that Campbell is a big part of this secondary. But with that said, we know this group is pretty deep. I even have a piece up at DogNation.com right now, part of my Own the East series, courtesy of Georgia's own credit union. We talk about the overall level of depth in the Georgia secondary. We know this group is deep. We know Daniel in particular is an interesting prospect because Georgia doesn't typically go after junior college defensive backs. Would not go after a guy like Daniel unless it was sure that he had a chance to play. There were whispers and rumors coming out of the first scrimmage, for instance, when a lot of folks got a chance to see that Daniel performed well that day. So Daniel being in the mix is not a surprise. However, his emergence isn't necessarily going to cause me to turn my back on Campbell and what I still think is possible for him here and what will be his sophomore season. What it goes to show you overall is that this is a Georgia secondary that Smart himself is pretty confident in. Remember, he had all of these guys for spring practice. There are no summer enrollees in this group. There are no transfers that just arrived in this group. This entire bunch was either on the field for Georgia last year or previous years, or at least went through spring practice and is now pretty acclimated to the overall situation. Let me give you another example that proves my point on that. Let's go opposite of where Daniel was working yesterday to the other cornerback spot, the one we assume is going to be occupied by Eric Stokes. We would assume that Stokes is the one sure thing starter because that's the role in which he finished the season in last year. However, on Thursday, when Smart was admittedly a little salty with reporters all the way around, he wouldn't even concede the idea that Stokes is a surefire starter. Here's what he said then when asked about the cornerback's position opposite of the one that Daniel and Campbell may be battling it out for.
He's done a nice job developing. He came in last year in a kind of a backup role, ended up winning the starting job by the way he played. He made some big plays in some big games, did a nice job. He's in competition right now. I mean, there's three, four guys out there at corner that are competing, and he knows it. He's got to step it up and play well every day because we're only judged based on our last play, and he's challenging for one of those starting positions.
So I think it's very interesting at the end there that Kirby Smart says even Eric Stokes is challenging for one of those starting positions. Now, I don't believe for a moment that Stokes isn't a starter in this team, to use, a double negative there. I think he probably is, but the fact that Kirby won't even publicly concede that lets you know the nature of this competition right now going on at defensive back. I think Tyreek Stevenson is involved in this. I know he's been a little banged up a little bit this summer, but I think he's involved in this. I think the safety situation for Georgia actually looks really good right now with two very solid starters and a guy like Lewisine and potentially Otis Reese kind of in the mix below that. I believe the overall story for the Georgia secondary, whether it ends up being Tyson Campbell opposite Eric Stokes or ends up being DJ Daniel or someone like Tyreek Stevenson works his way in there, to say nothing of what might be happening with Devon Wilson and Mark Webb and some of those guys there at the star position. I think that the overall story for the Georgia secondary is the kind of thing that Georgia fans know, media within the Dog Nation bubble probably knows, but the national media hasn't quite figured out yet. that the Georgia secondary is a lot closer to being part of the solution for UGA than it is to be part of the problem. The assumption would be when you lose DeAndre Baker, a Thorpe Award winner from the previous year, that there'll be growing pains in trying to replace him. There may end up being some of those, but I think when you hear Kirby Smart talks, he likes the depth that he has. He likes the experience some of this group has gained, either through spring practice a year ago or being on the field the previous season. One way or another, no matter who the starters end up being, I think Kirby Smart feels pretty good about his secondary right now. All right, it is great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. A whole lot more fun stuff coming up on today's program, including some harsh words for Florida, still continuing after its week zero ugly win versus Miami. Before that, a lot of recruiting news. It's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Let's talk to Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And Jeff Sintel, it has been a while since I've had as many questions for you as I have today. There's just a lot going on when it comes to the latest on the 2020 class. There's at least one 2021 question I want to squeeze in today. So we have got a lot of news to cover. If it's okay with you, I'd like to jump right into that. Darnell Washington, you wrote about this at DogNation.com. He released his top three. I think we can show this to folks. One of these really cool Vegas-themed edits for the Las Vegas native, Mr. Washington. It is Tennessee. It is Georgia. It is Miami. Jeff, I don't mind telling you that for a guy that one point in time at a top 12 has now whittled it down to a top three, if this is the competition for Georgia, I like the Dogs' chances. Now, I know Niedermeyer, the Tennessee tight end recruiter, is pretty effective at his position, but it seems like the Vols, to use a Vegas phrase, have kind of gone all in on Rick Gilbert for right now. Miami, I have zero respect for at the moment. I feel pretty good about where Georgia is for Darnell Washington. If this is indeed his top three, how do you think a Georgia fan should feel about this?
Well, first of all, they should look at that Vegas edit and think of maybe happier times in one's lifetime. Maybe they should think about Miami or even Tennessee throwing snake eyes when it comes to this final three or top three. It's funny, he went in on Instagram about, 40 minutes ago, Brandon. I know you're all over Instagram. And he actually added back that that Alabama and Penn State are still in it. They're just not good enough to get at the table right now with Georgia, Miami, and Tennessee.
So, Jeff, who do I need to talk to? Congressman? Is this a state law thing? We got to get these young men to stop adding to their finalists. Zachary Evans has done this. Darnell Washington has done this. And far be it from me to try to anchor any of these guys I'd like to see come to Georgia, but it ought to be against the law to drop a top three and then go on Instagram the next day and say, no, I've still got two more that are included in this. I mean, I know when it comes to recruiting, there's sort of varied definitions of words. For instance, commitment doesn't mean what it used to mean. Offer doesn't mean what it used to mean. But can we at least protect the sanctity of a list of finalists? Is that asking too much?
Okay, Brad, I'm going to try to make you laugh here, sir. Are you saying that you don't like the fact that this was a soft top three with silent top fours and top fives to Penn State and Alabama? You don't like this director's cut of top three, which includes extended scenes from Darnell Washington's recruitment?
Yeah, listen, I mean, the young man's free to do whatever he wants to do, but it just makes my job a lot harder because when Zachary Evans dropped his top five, we came on the show and said, I'm not sure this is the real top five. I'm pretty sure at least one of these Lone Star State schools is going to get included into that, and sure enough, that ended up being the case. And now Darnell Washington essentially does the same thing as well. I'm just saying that for those of us that love speculating about this kind of stuff, we don't want to water down the top three edit. I mean, there's room on that screen for two more logos if that's indeed what he wanted to do.
That's kind of funny, Brandon. I think with these young men and the moves they make, I mean, it's sometimes fun keeping up with them all. But when you have these expanded, I mean, you got to give the fella some credit. He went down from a top 12, and then he hinted that he has a top four coming, and then he goes to the top three. He's at least making some progress in the room, right?
Well, and let me be—you're right about that. And I how much fun I have with that kind of stuff typically. But I'll be serious about this from two standpoints, coming strictly from the perspective of a Georgia fan. As I told you before, beating out Tennessee, even with Niedermeyer recruiting, I'm assuming that's his lead recruiter, even with that going on, that's not the kind of thing that Georgia can't do. Miami, I think, is fairly easy to beat. But the presence of Penn State, Big Ten teams just typically use tight ends more. They've been heavily involved for Theo Johnson, for instance, as well. So that's a program that recruits tight ends. Alabama has had a history of tight ends here between Irv Smith last year. You want to go back to the five-star they had before that showed out in the national championship game. They've had kind of a history of tight ends. So from a Georgia perspective here, the inclusion of Alabama and Penn State, if that's indeed the case, that does make it more difficult than if it's just Tennessee and if it's just Miami.
Well, you see a lot of Eric Gilbert threads through that right there. You have Tennessee and Alabama get involved. I've always found it curious. I don't know if we've ever brought it up on your fine program, Brandon, that with all this talk about Tennessee recruiting Eric Gilbert to be a wide receiver, his primary recruiter and day-to-day daily recruiter is actually still the tight ends coach. I think I find that very amusing.
Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting. And it just kind of goes to show you, I guess, how effective they view him as a recruiter. But since you bring that up, I want to go through that door for a moment because our buddy Terrence Edwards, who we both like and respect, had some interesting things to say about Eric Gilbert on Twitter recently, really throwing some compliments his way, which is a pretty good tie. In fact, we may have that to show, maybe. If we do, we can show that. But it's a pretty good time for that to come out, given the fact that Gilbert looked good in his season opener for Marietta this past week to start his high school career. And it kind of leads me to say that I've kind of evolved on this Gilbert recruitment just a little bit. I am now to the point where I'd be fine with Georgia recruiting him as a wide receiver. I really would. He catches the ball enough for Marietta on a deep and talented team. I'm not telling he's the same kind of receiver that George Pickens is or the same kind of receiver that Dominic Blaylock is. If Georgia wants to recruit Eric Gilbert as a receiver, I'm more than fine with it. Maybe they still don't win the recruitment and Gilbert ends up going somewhere else, which I'm sort of fine with as well because Georgia's in the mix for plenty of top-flight guys. But when it comes to the strategy that I would employ here, I actually wouldn't have a problem with Georgia recruiting him as a receiver now. I just think he's that impressive with the way he catches the football.
Would that be the most Georgia thing to do if they ended up with Darnell Washington and Theo Johnson at tight end and then also Darnell and then Eric Gilbert at wide receiver? Would that just be your Mr. Burns heart delight right there?
Yeah, it'd be like what is the modern version of, you know, the old four horsemen of the apocalypse from Notre Dame at running backs. I don't know what the trio of tight ends version of that would be, but that'd be a little bit like that, I guess.
Can you imagine a formation, and James Foley could definitely draw it up, with a package that includes maybe a Zamir White on one side of the formation, and then it would have on the other side of the formation a Gilbert, a Washington, and a Johnson all on the other side.
Yeah, that's
goodness gracious.
That's pretty impressive. Think about it. It's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider update here with Jeff Sintel. And, you know, Marlowe's Tavern's a perfect place for a date night. You can kind of steal away in a comfy booth, kind of a relaxing, cool-looking dining room. It's one of the reasons why we like Marlowe's Tavern so much because it's just a great place to take the person you're trying to impress, whether it's a date or a client or anything else. You can have a little creme brulee. You know, we've done that before. Jeff and I have actually made that. Now, if you go there for your own date night, you won't be eating creme brulee that I've made. You'll be eating creme brulee made by the chef right there at the tavern in your neighborhood, so no fears about that. But if you're looking for a great place to impress that significant other in your life, Marlowe's Tavern, the one closest to you, is certainly a great way to be able to do that. On the subject of guys who catch footballs, let me talk about Marcus Roseme for a moment, Jeff. I know you have seen what he was able to do over the weekend. Very impressive one-handed catch. Now, one-handed catches in football have become a little passe because everybody's making them all the time. But this one from Roseme as a high school player is still overall pretty impressive. And the question that leads me to want to ask you is, you know, last year for the class of 2019 on this program, we fixated on receivers because it had been such a long time since Georgia landed an elite one. Well, last year it got two truly nationally elite, ranked among the best players in the country with Blaylock and George Pickens. And so in some respects, Georgia's now proven they can do what up till last year's in the recruiting cycle they hadn't necessarily shown. And here we are the year later, and Roseme is in the mix of the class of 2019. And for whatever reason, maybe I'm to blame for this, he just gets a lot less attention than than receivers got for the 2019 class. So I'm curious to know from you, because you've watched him closely. You've told us before that you think he's knocking on the door of actually becoming a composite five-star before the recruiting cycle is all said and done. How well do you think Roseme compares to some of the receivers in this program that we have just seemingly obsessed over from time to time? He's got the ranking. He's got the film. What kind of player is Marcus Roseme in your mind?
I'm going to say this with not too much hesitation, but I think when Marcus Roseme, he came in real early, he's going to be a May guy in 2020. But I think when Marcus Roseme shows up at Georgia, I think he will immediately become one of the program's top five receivers. I think he is on the same talent spectrum as both Blaylock and Pickens were. And here's what's going to happen quite nicely for Georgia. When those viral clips start popping up during the season of a Matt Landers or a George Pickens or a Tyler Simmons or a Kyaris Jackson or Demetrius Robertson, Dominique Blaylock start making these plays, then the program finally has cover boys for its wide receiver position as well. And what I mean by that is that big, athletic, 6'3 and up receiver that can go up and get a ball on anybody, and that will mesh very well with the pro-style thinking and the way Georgia goes about running his offense. I think what's interesting, if we want to be very objective when we start talking and sharing information about the wide receiver position at Georgia, Roseme is a guy, obviously, that's steadfastly committed to Georgia. But if you start talking that Eric Gilbert, I'm fine with it, goulash about the wide receiver position, then you got to start thinking about, okay, Georgia currently has a speed guy, Corey Wren, a size guy, and Roseme committed. There's also, I would say, the threat level now with Clemson for Arian Smith. Yeah. That's the nation's fastest wide receiver. There's lots of information for folks to find on the Dog Nation Forum about how talented Smith is. He's probably the fastest football player in the country this year. Maybe even a polar bear's toenail, shout out to Outkast right there, difference in a 40-yard dash between him and Corey Wren. But then you've got, is Gilbert now wide receiver thought? What happens to Smith? I think Smith is the better pure burner at receiver, but at the same time, you've got Clemson knocking on his front door, too, saying, we'd love for you to come play for our program as well and slide down the slide and catch some balls from Trevor Lawrence.
It's a lot to think about, for sure. A lot of folks in our YouTube comment section talking about Roseme, Jason Hester, Lamar Lovelace compares him to Michael Irvin, which is a very interesting comparison. And somebody else a moment ago talked about how he thinks he's absolutely just as good as Blaylock and Pickens were last year. So maybe it's about time to start giving Marcus Roseme a little more credit on this show. We probably don't talk about him as much as we should, just given the elite nature of his status as one of the top wide receivers for the class of 2020. But for now, go ahead, sir.
So, Brandon, here's what I'm going to say. You know, dadgummit, this is a dadgummit Marlowe's Tavern tell-all moment. We're going to have something on the site today about Marcus Roseme for people who learn a little bit more about him. It's time. He made SportsCenter Top 10. He made that big catch. We're going to put up a Marcus Roseme story today on DogNation.com.
You know what, Jeff? That's perfect timing, and I'm glad you told the folks about that, because that's going to be a really fun read coming up at DogNation.com a little later on today. Let me change the subject for right now. And, Jeff, there is a town that I did not think I'd want to be talking about anytime too soon, but I'm going to mention it once again. It's Destrehan, Louisiana. That is the town that was not very kind to Georgia a year ago when John Emery Jr. decided he wanted to go to LSU instead of going to UGA, and probably we're still a little battle-scarred from losing that one around here. But Destrehan is interesting again for the class of 2020 because it is also the home of running back Kyle Edwards. Edwards just announced a public pledge within the last week to Alabama. I'm going to ask you a very self-serving question. Is Alabama taking another running back, Edwards, who is far more lowly rated than Evans or any of the other backs we typically discuss here? I have no idea if he's a good player or not. I'm just going by the ratings on this. He's not a highly rated player. Is this Alabama waving the white flag in the Zachary Evans chase? Now, caveat, of course, for the most part, we think this is Georgia versus Texas A&M at this point anyway. But maybe some Alabama fans don't necessarily feel that way. Is Alabama now officially eliminated from the Zachary Evans sweepstakes?
it doesn't happen as simple as that Ed McMahon letter that comes to your mailbox, Brandon, about these sweepstakes entries. I would agree with one of your earlier points that to me it's always been a Georgia versus a Texas school for Zachary Evans. You continue to see things with Alabama's recruiting and also maybe a very slow talent bleed out of that program.
Oh, yeah.
Where if you're an Alabama fan, I mean, there's a great example. I'm going to bring up Landon Dickerson, somebody from 2016. Landon Dickerson was at Florida State. Georgia was in there for him for the longest time until Pittman's dream line of the Torrey Johnson, name from the past, and Justin Schaefer came together in that cycle. And, you know, there was just the thinking there that, you know, Dickerson hits the Florida State. He has an okay first season, and then his second and third seasons are halted by injuries. And then he gets to Alabama. He decides to graduate out of Florida State. He can graduate transfer. He shows up at Alabama in June and is already a co-starter at center in one of the guard spots.
Yeah.
And then you hear rumbling. Now, to me, that should not happen at Alabama, especially mighty, mighty Alabama. Especially across the offensive line. They still got Jedrick Willis there. They still got Alex Leatherwood, things of that nature.
Well, Jeff, how about Christian Harris, who just got on campus like 3 weeks ago, and because of McMillan's injury, he's going to start at linebacker.
Yeah, he's really fast. He played most of his career as a DB, cornerback, mostly cornerback. But Georgia was in his top three for the longest time last year as well.
Yeah.
But you see these things with Alabama, and then I just wanted to give that backstory because a lot of the things you hear from a lot of Alabama people, I still have a lot of contacts in that state, is how does Georgia still go over the top shelf, go get the top shelf running backs? And here's another player. Look at their top-rated offensive line recruit in the 2020 cycle right now. Here's another player where it seems like 2020 Alabama is settling for the type of recruiting meals that 2015, 16, and 17 Alabama wouldn't even look twice at.
So I want to stay on this topic for a couple seconds because I think it's interesting that you brought this up. I'd be lying if I said here on Dog Nation Daily we haven't noticed this. There are seemingly more 3 stars in the mix for Alabama than we're used to seeing. Some of that is along the offensive line. The running back here, I believe, is a composite 3-star as well. Now, they're still highly rated with this current recruiting class, but they also have 22 public commitments. Their average level of recruit is rated below Georgia's right now for the 2020 class. Unless something's changed in the last few days, they still don't have a quarterback commit for 2020 either, and most of the quarterbacks of this class are kind of already off the board. I know they signed 2 last year, so maybe they don't feel like they need one, but still. Jeff, I do think this is very interesting that for now, Alabama is doing some things from a recruiting standpoint they historically would not have done. That's fair to say, right?
Yeah, but Alabama is recruiting like a top 5, top 7 program, and they're not recruiting like the program that won 7 consecutive number one mythical recruiting classes. And I think it's really easy to just translate this. Yeah, there's two trajectories each of these programs are going to, where Georgia seems like it's trying to top its high score in Space Invaders every time with every recruiting cycle with Kirby Smart. It seems like Alabama is not able to throw those haymakers on the recruiting trail like it used to.
Well, I've said this a million times. The first year that Saban doesn't make the playoff, he's gone. Jeff, right now, he's not recruiting like a guy that plans on being in Alabama for 5 years. That's me. That's not you. People can send their hate mail to me on that. I'm just telling you that right now, Alabama seems to be, to me, operating on a very short-term trajectory. That doesn't mean they won't win the national championship this year because that's what they're obviously stacking up and trying to do. But this is not a 5-year plan in place at Alabama at the moment. People can just sort of file that away and see if I end up being right about that. Let me do 2 things before we let you go, Jeff. I'm going to try to do these quick. They're both quarterback related. It was probably, and you can tell me if I'm overstating this, but probably not a great summer for Carson Beck. Some of the camp stuff maybe didn't go quite the way that he wanted it to, and yet it seems like, by all indications, I didn't get to see any of the game. I know it was streamed over the internet, that Beck had a really good performance to open his season for his team down in Florida on Friday night, essentially picking up where he'd left off last year when it comes to 11-on-11 play. That's really been where he's made a name for himself. If you're watching a video, in fact, you can see one of the highlights from Beck getting it done with a very, very impressive throw there. How much does Beck, Jeff, for his you know, recruiting reputation, whatever that matters. How much does he need a big senior season? How much for Georgia fans who worry about who their starting quarterback is going to be in 2020? How much do they need to see Bet do more of what he did this past weekend, which was, at least in my eyes, play very well?
See, what you want to see is you want to see Carson Beck do more with his senior season, right, sir?
Yeah, there you go. You should coin that phrase. That's pretty good. You should coin that.
Well, I would say that pressure doesn't seem like a privilege for Carson Beck during his senior year. What he's doing is he's trying to attack the day every day with a different roster at Derek Mann.
You're going to check off every box here. I like that.
I'm going to go back to Energy Vampires in a minute, man, if you give me a second.
That's not bad.
But so here's the thing. Carson Beck, actually, to provide clarity on this, opening wasn't what he thought it would be. He went to the quarterback collective and had a very good showing there. There were some pro coaches that took a lot of notice of what he did during those workouts. And they all kind of look at him, those Sunday coaches, those offensive coordinators, those quarterback coaches, they look at him as a guy that will be on their draft boards in a few years. Beck doesn't have the receivers, at least not right now, that he had a year ago. He had a lot of fast, quick, twitchy guys that had a little bit of low-level D1 potential. This year's receiving core is a little bit more of a work in progress. The line is probably just as good. The running back core, the running game will be a lot better. But this will be a lot more on maybe Carson Beck, much like Jake Fromm's going through, at least having to throw to a lot of unproven guys to begin the year. Well, you saw that game, you saw the way he performed. He actually, Brandon, showed a lot of mobility for folks that watched all that thing like I did. He got loose and was able to extend plays. There was one play on a short yardage play where the pocket collapsed. He saw a hole, he darted upfield, and he delivered the Madden-style truck stick to a defender and put a shoulder through the young man's helmet and gained a first down on a very, you know, a very contested play. There was no slide to that at all. So I think with Beck, I think the main thing that he's doing right now, even as a recruiter over the last 2 or 3 months on the trail, is everybody identifies him as an alpha quarterback and the type of quarterback that a guy like a T.O. Johnson, a Darnell Washington, Zachary Evans, Kendall Milton, all those type of talents, Corey Wren, Marcus Rosen, all those guys can see themselves playing and doing big, big things with a Carson Beck at the helm.
That's really nice to hear. Let me do one quick final thing as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update before we let you go. Jeff, around here, we've kind of operated on the assumption that Caleb Williams was going to be, I guess, something of a given for Georgia's 2021 class, which may be, frankly, just too ambitious of a thought process right now. I did notice that there was a Yahoo story the other day where, and I didn't quite understand this, to be completely honest with you, but it read as if Williams' two favored schools were Stanford and Maryland. Maryland, obviously, a little bit of a geographic advantage. Stanford's the academic institution, which has done quarterbacking pretty well now for a number of years. Did you see the story? What do you make of this? From reading this, it seemed like there are other schools ahead of Georgia for Williams' commitment. Is this Georgia fans just being too presumptuous, I guess is the right word, about Williams? Did the Yahoo story get it wrong? What is this?
Okay, Brandon, well, I saw the story, read the story, spoke to Caleb Williams about it, and shared a little bit more intel drips about that on the Dog Nation forum. Nice. Intel's intel, hurry up, thread.
Nice.
So here's a few things. What I guess the clarity we'll provide or context we'll provide to that story is there is a spreadsheet that is maintained by Caleb Williams' father. That's Carl Williams. And what they're doing is they're basically looking at their rating things. They got the analytics out there, and they're rating each of the schools that he's liked or he prefers or favors right now across a spectrum of criteria. One of the things the Williams family has asked these schools to do is to present a plan for him, that's in the article, to present a plan for him to how you would get him from your program from signing day to being a number one pick, and I think it's the 2024 draft. I think that's important to that family. They want, just like they would want any school that you want to get a computer engineering degree in, they want to know how that school is going to get their son employed by the NFL as the number one pick. and they're asking all of the schools in mind here to submit their presentations and their PowerPoints or their methods for going about that. The reason why Stanford and Maryland were cited as top schools is that they had the top-rated schools on that criteria. I don't know how feelings and guts and just, you know, the it factor will carry over into their spreadsheet. I do know from talking to Caleb Williams that the concept of a top school or leaders, that's not something he's really throwing around right now or really has a good grasp on. He's a guy that doesn't feel like he needs to commit until after his junior season, and he doesn't care where everybody else is going. He doesn't care who is there. What he feels like is wherever he goes, his talents will rise to the ability he needs to in order to grab some playing time. It is very, and one of the other points in that forum thread, Brandon, that I wanted to make clear for folks is he visited Oregon, Stanford, LSU, and Georgia over the summer. He's not visiting schools over the summer unless he's deeply interested in them. Of course, Maryland's an easier haul. What I did find very interesting about through my reporting here is when he went to visit Stanford, Stanford has yet to offer him. They want to see some more junior film. And when he was at Stanford, Coach David Shaw was not able to meet with him. Well, contrast that with the trip to Oregon. You better believe Cristobal met with him. The trip to LSU, Orgeron met with him, made lots of time. Mm-hmm. When he goes to Georgia, James Coley and Kirby Smart make those visits a priority. So that's just something to file away and think about, how one of the schools that's kind of contending right now is his top school. He doesn't even have an offer from, according to that article, as a top school. The other thing, folks that will remember this from the days of those energy vampires on the bus and Demetrius Robertson, and then the stories later on with N'Kobe Dean. Everybody knows if they follow their DogNation.com recruiting coverage that you got to have a 25 on your ACT, and you've got to be accepted into the school at Stanford in order to even get an offer to take an official visit after that school.
Well, Jeff, it's great stuff. It's been a while since we've done one of these real long ones as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update, but we appreciate your time today. And while I've got folks' attention, I'll also remind you that speaking of Marlowe's, we've got brand new content courtesy of Marlowe's debuting this week. Take a look on Thursday for our Marlowe's matchup. Myself and the great former Georgia All-American John Stinchcomb looking ahead to the upcoming game for the Dogs each week. Obviously this week, a lot on Vanderbilt and all the folks heading up to Nashville to make it fun this weekend. Jeff, I'm looking forward to being in Nashville with you this weekend as well. And at some point, we got to talk about what we're doing. I told folks as part of our R.S. Andrews cooldown yesterday that I'm trying to get you to do like a little bit of a pub crawl, kind of a fun caravan of a few of the hot spots around Broadway, Midtown, place like that around Nashville. And I can't quite tell if I've got your full buy-in on this or not yet. Connor's going to be with us, of course, too. I can't quite tell what kind of buy-in I'm getting from you on this.
Brandon, we just need to let the people decide. If there's some spots we need to go, we need to tweet up, we need to hang out, we need to, what's the opposite of a cool down in the middle of Nashville on a Friday night?
We're going to get some Nashville hot chicken and heat it up. That's what we're going to do. We're going to get some hot chicken and heat it up.
That sounds like a fun time.
Have you had the Nashville hot chicken before, Jeff?
I have not, Brandon. Is that a delicacy we've got to do?
I think it's probably pretty much one you're going to want to check out, I think.
Hey, folks, we're going to be in Nashville Friday night. You know, Brandon is going to be the maestro of ceremony. Connor will have all the beautiful, just out of college age women trailing him around because he's so Dog Nation Daily famous right now. And we'd love to hang out with you guys sometime.
All right, we'll talk about this on Friday, Jeff, if you're good enough to join us again on Dog Nation Daily. We need an official, definitive plan. We're going to do some huge events later on this season. This one's a little bit more on the kind of the low-key down low, but I think it's going to be really, really fun. So can we talk more about this on Friday?
We're going to talk about hot chicken intel on Friday.
There you go. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate you being here.
You too.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So, yeah, we're going to talk more about this. This is like twice now that I've pitched him the idea of doing this, and he's kind of sidestepped it both times. He's tried to do a DeAndre Swift move on me a couple times here. I don't know what he has planned. He must have something he wants to do privately or something. So by all means, but I think we're going to do this. kind of a low key thing, a little bit more relaxed atmosphere. I think this is going to be fun, but I got to get Jeff's buy in on this. I believe I've got Connor Riley ready to go, but I just got to get everybody else involved as well. Hey, let me tell you about my friends at MyBookie. Some of the stuff they're doing for this upcoming football season. This is going to be, I think, the most fun year for MyBookie because they're doing something. I believe this is the first time they've done this. I've always wanted to do this. How about an online handicapping super contest? Now, you've heard of these super contests before where you pick some games. Well, here's what you do for the MyBookie one. The winner is going to win up to $100,000. It only costs $100 to enter. You just pick five NFL games against the spread, and then you climb the leaderboard. It's the way the super contest kind of works here. And then when it's all said and done, you're going to have your share of that prize pool, depending on how well you do on the event. Also, the same thing that MyBookie's doing this season that they've always done, those big bonuses when you sign up to $1,000 first deposit bonus through MyBookie. You can double your first deposit, but you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION. It's D-A-W, the way it's supposed to be spelled, DOGNATION, all one word. Use that promo code at MyBookie. MyBookie is very easy to find online. Just go to your browser, type it in, MyBookie. Search MyBookie, find MyBookie, use the promo code DOGNATION. Big bonus when you sign up to $1,000 on your first deposit. You can double your first deposit. Check out MyBookie and make sure you use the promo code DOGNATION when you do. All right, SEC through time here. Let's talk about a couple of stories. I saw where Greg McElroy goes on College Football Live yesterday, and he said that Felipe Franks had regressed. Now, I'm going to be very careful not to sound like a hypocrite when I talk about this, but I think that McElroy is getting this all wrong. This idea that we saw Franks play well last November, which proves he's good, and therefore what we saw on Saturday was regression from that. Honestly, this is the mistake that sports writers and analysts and people like that make all the time. The word consistency, is that the right word? Consistency is misused in sports constantly because people assume that consistency means maintaining your top end performance every single Saturday, and that's not the case. Franks played a couple pretty good games late at the end of the season, and therefore people assumed he was going to be better. Mullen told us over the offseason he'd been working, but the truth is he had a rare outlier at the end of last year where he may have played a good game, but for the most part he has been consistent throughout his career. He is average as grits, and what we saw on Saturday from him to start the season against Miami was just kind of more of the same on that. So Franks actually isn't to blame here. He has told you what kind of quarterback he is. There is a wishful thinking among some in the media that the evidence might not be what it adds up to be. But in this case, what we saw from Franks on Saturday is just kind of more of the same there on that. Now, the part where I run the risk of being a little bit of a hypocrite is because, on the one hand, I'm going to tell you not to pay too much attention to some late November performances for Felipe Franks and the assumption that he's suddenly a much better player. But I am going to tell you that the late season performances for Joe Burrow a year ago are going to indicate a better year for him this upcoming season. Now, you may say, well, how in the world can both those things be true? There's a big difference between Burrow and Franks. We've been watching Franks for a long time. He's had the one thing at his disposal that most quarterbacks, if they are going to get better, they use to get better, and that's experience. Burrow, because he was buried in the Ohio State depth chart, didn't have as much of that. So the fact that Burrow found his way on the field for LSU and by the end of the season found his way to success, I'm sorry. If you're betting on one guy or the other, you are betting on Burrow at LSU to have the big year, not Franks at Florida. So this idea that McElroy says he regressed, the honest truth is this is who Felipe Franks has always been. There are a lot of quarterbacks I'd take over him in the SEC, Joe Burrow included. Speaking of LSU, former LSU defensive back Kelvin Joseph has apparently found a home. This is a big deal. I think it's Rivals that reported this first. If I got this wrong, then I apologize to all concerned. I regret the error. It looks like he's going to Kentucky. Now, quiet is kept, Kentucky continues to add some talent here. Some of it's through recruiting. This is a big-time transfer. I think Florida thought they had Joseph, so for those of you that have been following the story, here's a reason for you to get involved. Gator haters out there, and I gotta put Eddie on the set today. Eddie's missing off the desk for right now. But Gator haters will like this, the fact that Florida thought it was going to get the transfer from LSU. He's apparently going to Kentucky instead. That's a pretty big deal. There's a lot of talk. Kirk Herbstreit mentioned this the other day. this belief that, that Kentucky really did turn a corner last year, and that that Stoops, the Kentucky coach, feels pretty good about his talent there, this thought that maybe this Kentucky program's building something a little more substantial than what exists with Will Muschamp at South Carolina, a little more quickly than what Jeremy Pruitt might be doing it at Tennessee, and a little more stable than the weird situation involving Missouri where it's a transfer quarterback and some NCAA sanctions and some things along those lines. I'm not necessarily buying into that right now. Kentucky's my pick to finish last in the SEC East, but there are some who are, and you know, for the future, to be able to have a guy like Kelvin Joseph on your roster certainly seems to back that up, that Stoops may actually be building something in the SEC East. The bottom part of this conference, this division, can't necessarily be able to match right now. A couple other stories. I'm going to do these quickly. I talked about this with Jeff Sintel a moment ago. So Christian Harris, a freshman linebacker from Louisiana, comes into Alabama as a summer enrollee and is now on the depth chart that Saban released yesterday, listed as a starter. It was unheard of for a summer enrollee to be able to do this at Alabama within recent years. But because of the Josh McMillan injury and because of the fact that Harris himself is probably a pretty good player, all of a sudden this is indeed going down. The fact that Saban released a depth chart yesterday kind of got some attention because there are a lot of coaches now that don't do that. But on that depth chart, the presence of Harris as a starter is a pretty interesting development here for the Crimson Tide. They are not as deep at linebacker as you're used to seeing them be. Dylan Moses is still potentially a top-flight player, of course. But this is an interesting development to watch for on Saturday against Duke. By the way, Vegas loves Alabama here. This number's gone from 30 to 35 since the week has began. Two quick Tennessee stories. Tennessee has still not heard anything about the transfer status of Aubrey Solomon, who came to the Vols from Michigan. Obviously, I'm no Tennessee fan, and I don't really care if they get the depth on their roster or not, but I do at least think Solomon deserves to hear something from the NCAA. To me, there's something cruel and unusual about ruling on some of these transfers very quickly and taking forever to rule on others. The Solomon news has been out here for months. It seems like the NCAA should have said something by now, but they obviously operate on their own time frame. And while this one may be hurting Tennessee, which we around here kind of like, the fact that they're, I think, treating Solomon unfairly is something I frankly don't like very much. And on a more serious subject, so Tennessee has announced that it's suspending Bryce Thompson, the defensive back who was involved with the domestic allegation and allegedly threatened to, I think, shoot up the school was the phrase that he used there. This is a potentially serious situation. He's suspended indefinitely. Obviously, the off-field stuff is serious, but within the realm of football, it's a pretty big loss for the Vols if he misses significant time. Tennessee secondary, I've told you before, I think it's pretty good. I think Thompson was one of the reasons why. So this is a story worth following. We'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, speaking of serious situations, on a sort of much different note, you may have seen the report. DogNation.com had it yesterday. I guess The Athletic broke this first, that New England Patriots center and former Georgia Bulldog David Boss Andrews has been hospitalized dealing with a blood clot situation. He's going to miss an indefinite period of time there with the Patriots. This is the kind of thing that sort of goes beyond the realm of injury. This is health and illness, which is a completely different situation. And I don't have to say this. Everybody already knows this and believes this. Boy, you don't talk about prayers going out to Andrews right now. So scary and so disappointing for a guy that has represented Georgia so well since becoming a member of the Patriots. Around here, we don't like New England necessarily, but we love the way that Andrews represents in that uniform and some of the work that he's done. We had a chance to catch up with him back Super Bowl week, and he talked about the work that he did to go from being a guy that, lightly recruited guy, working his way up to Georgia, and now with the Patriots. And, his hard work is the kind of thing that's defined him as a player. In fact, here's what he said about that then.
I don't think it makes me any different football player. I've just carried this, been the same David I've been my whole life, tried to play with the same way I played when I was 6 years old. I think the love for the game, the passion for the game, the love for your teammates, that stuff's what carries you and what makes you a good teammate and good football player.
The phrase DGD is the kind of thing that gets thrown around a lot, and at times maybe it gets used too casually, too lightly. Y'all, there isn't anyone who embodies the whole notion of being a damn good dog more than David Boss Andrews does. Hard worker, made a name for himself, found a real home in the NFL, and now he's got a little bit of a health situation going on. We'll try to follow this story and stay close to what's happening up there in New England with him on that. His football career, for the moment, put on pause. A health situation that he's dealing with. Keep him in your prayers, and we'll hope to hear some good news on that front hopefully very soon. So we appreciate you being with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. Around this time on the show each and every day, we like to give you our Gator Hater Updater. We'll do that and let you know. 1,032 days, that's how long it's been since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. We think that's really good news, and we're glad to be able to say that for you here today on Dog Nation Daily. I mentioned this with Jeff Sintel also a little earlier. Y'all stay tuned this week for some really fun content coming up at dognation.com. A lot of stuff rolling out. One of the things I'm really excited about, we're going to do this for you this week. We're going to be doing our Marlowe's matchup with our buddy John Stinchcomb. And that means we'll be doing some Marlowe's broadcasts throughout the year here as well. We got our first one coming up in just a couple of weeks. We'll tell you more about that when we get there. It's going to be a great, fun season at Dog Nation, in other words. Really new, special content. Some huge events coming up in the weeks ahead. I can't wait to tell all of you about it. Just really appreciate you being with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody.